Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by iTalki, which is a really, really great way to get some English speaking into your life. With iTalki, you can get a teacher for some lessons, or you can find a community tutor who will just speak English to you. That could be someone from the UK, for example. And it's just a really, really great way to build that essential skill into your routine, which is speaking and actually speaking with a real person rather than just doing exercises. And don't forget, if you buy some lessons or teaching time, then iTalki will send you a voucher, which is equivalent to a lesson. So it's like a free lesson, basically. To get that offer, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, folks. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing today? I hope you're doing all right and you're not too hot, because it is absolutely boiling here today in France. It's sweltering. Blisteringly hot, you could say. Apparently the temperature is going to be something like 36, maybe 37 degrees, which is really unprecedented. It doesn't usually get this hot. I know in some of the countries where you are listening to this, it's probably much hotter than that. And you're probably thinking, 37 degrees, no worries, that's cool. No problem with that. But for me, I guess, as an English person who, frankly, is not really equipped for temperatures above something like 25, 26. It's all a bit much, but it's okay. We're keeping cool, we're keeping calm and collected here at Luke's English Podcast. Everything's fine. I'm just, you know, chilling. Chilling out, relaxing. Chillaxing as well, you could say. As we move forward with another episode of this podcast. And this one is chock-a-block with natural conversation and language. Yesterday, I had Amber and Paul over to the flat, and I also invited Sarah Donnelly, a friend of the podcast. Sarah also brought her baby, who she had since she was last on this podcast. There's no relation, by the way, between her being on the podcast and having a baby. That's purely coincidental. Anyway, since she was on this podcast last, she has had a baby. And she brought the baby with her for this one. And anyway, the four of us sat around the table yesterday in the blistering heat to record some podcast material, and that is what you're going to hear in this episode. Sometimes you can hear the baby screaming and kind of gurgling and making baby noises in the background, but I don't think that spoils the recording, really. She hasn't learned how to talk yet, so you can't actually learn any English from her. But who knows? Her being on the podcast might help a little bit in some way in her learning of English. Anyway, it's not too disturbing. You just hear a few little sort of cute noises in the background sometimes. That's happened before on the podcast. Once Paul and I went to Amber's place and she had baby Hugo there making kind of dinosaur noises. So more dinosaur noises, basically, in this one. The conversation that you're going to hear is a little bit chaotic because there are four people who know each other very well, sometimes talking over each other. If you like, you can imagine that you're in a business meeting in which no business actually takes place, nobody observes the rules of formality, and where the participants just sit around chatting with each other. So not really like a business meeting at all, but anyway, a meeting of sorts. And this is the kind of thing that you might have to deal with in the future if you go to a meeting in English and there are a number of people discussing things and you have to try and keep up. So it's good practice to listen to this kind of thing to help you prepare for that kind of situation. This recording was slightly shorter than the usual full-on ramble that we have together. It's about half an hour's worth, but I'm going to do a bit of language analysis at the end. I'll pick out a few words and phrases, and I'll clarify them after the conversation has finished. Also, there is another language-related episode of the podcast featuring Amber, Paul, and Sarah coming soon. But here now is a discussion between the pod pals, Amber and Paul, also featuring Sarah Donnelly, the American with Irish roots, who's been on this podcast before, most recently talking about the US presidential elections with Sebastian Marx that time. So Amber, Paul and Sarah and me, and here are some things that we all have in common. So first of all, we're all English-speaking expats in France. All English-speaking people expatriated to France. Amber, Paul and me from England, and Sarah from the USA, although she does have Irish roots, as you'll find out. We're all with French people. We're all with French partners, either married to French people or paxed to French people. A pax is a kind of legal marriage, a civil marriage in France. They call it the pax. So you can actually be paxed to your paxi or your Pac-Man if it's a man. Or what, Mrs. Pac-Man? I suppose so. Anyway, we're all either married to French people or paxed with French people. And also we're all comedians on the stand-up scene as well. So in this chat we discuss a few things, such as the complexities of being with a foreign partner, bringing up a child in a foreign country to be bilingual, getting married and what it feels like for the bride and groom on the big day, Amber's new podcast, which was recently released online, Paul's upcoming gig in Australia, Sarah's Irish roots, and also some English slang from New Zealand, Australia and Northern Ireland. Now, here are some questions for you to consider as you listen to this conversation. This can help you, if you think about these questions, this can help you to focus on the content that you're about to hear. So here are five sets of questions. First of all, are you or have you ever been with a foreign person in a relationship? Have you ever had like a foreign boyfriend or girlfriend, a husband or wife or something? And what are the difficulties of being in a relationship with a foreign person or someone from another culture? What are the difficulties? Secondly, what's the best way to bring up a child to be fully bilingual? Is it possible to raise a bilingual child when only one of you speaks one of the target languages to the child at home? Third set, are you married? How did it feel for you on the big day? Did you cry? And have you ever been a guest at a wedding and did you cry? Fourth, have you heard Amber's podcast, which is called Pan Am? It's now available at panampodcast.com. And fifth, can you identify different English accents and dialects from around the world? How about American English versus British English? Can you identify the differences? Or can you, you know, notice different accents from different areas of the UK? How about Ireland and Northern Ireland? Can you tell the difference? And what about Australia and New Zealand? Do you know what their English sounds like? So consider those questions as you listen to this conversation and hold on until later when I will explain some of the vocabulary and some cultural stuff too, maybe touching on different accents, wedding vocabulary and more. But now you can listen to Amber, Paul, Sarah and me melting in my boiling hot apartment. Amber and Paul are on the podcast. Amber and Paul are on the podcast. Amber and Paul are on the podcast. Amber and Paul are on another podcast. Paul's a very funny boy. His laugh I very much enjoy. Amber's got a lovely voice. If I could choose an accent, hers will be my choice. Yeah. And Sarah Donnelly's a lovely person too. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
It's very hot.
Paul, can you just explain what's going on?
It's always me that explains where we are.
Well, so it doesn't have to be. It could be someone else.
Amber, let Paul go on.
You can do it.
So we're in your apartment. And normally at this time of year, we're upstairs.
That's right.
In the sun deck.
Getting sunburned and
yeah, we won't be doing that because it's too hot. It's hot as hell. Everyone's sweating. It's disgusting weather in Paris. It's humid. It's 31 degrees. That's what's happening. That's where we are.
Who's here, Amber?
Who's here? Yeah. Well, I'm here.
Yeah.
Paul Taylor's here. Yeah. Luke, you're here. Uh-huh. And Sarah Donnelly is here.
Sarah Donnelly.
Thanks for having me. This is my third or fourth time, I think.
I think it's about your fourth time.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember the other occasions that you were on the podcast?
I was here about a year ago, and we talked about the American elections, and I was like, for sure, there's no way Donald Trump could win. It's just not possible. False. Anything is possible in life.
I know.
Lepsters. So I was with Sebastian Marks. We talked about that. We've talked about how I'm an English teacher as well and a stand-up comedian as well.
Yeah, that's right. Guys, is there anything else that the world needs to know about Sarah Donnelly, do you think? Is there anything else that we need to know about?
She's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesomely
that's
funny.
Nice.
That's right.
And so you should go see her show.
That's right. Are you performing at any time soon?
I'm performing on Thursday night with everyone in this room.
That's right. I don't know if any listeners will get a chance to actually see us do that show.
Because this episode will probably come out after Thursday,
I don't
right?
know. This episode will probably go up tomorrow.
Oh, okay. All right, fair enough.
If I can manage it, it'll go
We're
up tomorrow.
We're on a show called One More Joke. But in the past, I have had my own show called Help, I Married a Frenchman. But Amber and I are working on. Thank you.
True story.
It's hard work being partnered with a French person, as everyone in this room.
Yeah, is that
can,
right? Are we all with French people?
We are all French people.
Wow.
So, Sarah, what's so difficult about being married to a French man?
I've 1 hour's worth of material on this.
Yes.
And I don't know if you can hear, I have my baby with me today too.
That's right.
So
there's a little baby on the floor.
There's a baby on the floor.
Baby.
And she's very hot. She's the best part about being married to a Frenchman.
Is she more French or more American?
I think she's more French. I try to stop it, but I just, like anything I can do to make her a little more English. Like my worst fear is that she just won't speak any English and like refuse to speak English.
No. She'll speak English first.
I will stop being your friend if she has a French accent. If she's like, hello, Apple. Good to see you again. I'd be like, whoa.
That happens.
It does happen.
Yeah.
But you just have to speak to her in English and refuse to speak to her in any other language.
So what are the conditions in which a child born of an English speaking mother
is getting inundated with French in her environment right now? And we do speak English at the home, but my husband speaks to her in French. So I'm not sure if me with her is enough English, especially if she goes to French school, especially if she has all French friends.
I have an example
Amber
where that
could probably discuss
say,
this.
No, go ahead. Robert Hain, our friend who's also been on the podcast, he's 12 year old, has grown up in France all his life, has been surrounded by French, and he just only spoke to Milo in English.
Yeah.
And refused to
American English.
Yeah, so it's not real English, but
count.
And his accent is like when he speaks English he sounds American. So that's what I'm hoping if we ever have kids, like that's the kind of
No, I mean I work with bilingual children a lot, and the real difference, and this is where the accent comes in for me, is you'll meet the parents and they'll be Anglophone, you know, wherever they're from. If they let their children speak to them in French. That is where it all goes wrong. So what happens is at a certain point the children are like, why am I speaking this other extra language? I can't be bothered to make that effort, you know. I spent my day in French and now my mum or dad has said, oh, how was your day, and it was in French my day, so I'm going to answer them in French. Or they don't want to be different from their friends or whatever reason. And
there's
if the
a
parents
lot of, there's a lot
don't
of
insist like you have to speak in English. Yeah, there are. But I mean, if the parents don't insist that you have to speak English, then that can be a real bad thing.
Luke Thompson's got something.
So if the child, for example, says, Papa.
Exactly.
Father.
Exactly. Well, I am your
father. Maybe in your case, in my case, she would say Papa and that would be acceptable.
Okay.
And she'll probably call me Maman too, but that's...
Yeah. By the way, listeners, there's no situation in which I would condone the hitting of a child. Okay, I just wanted to make
except
that clear.
Except if he calls you Papa.
Except obviously if they speak French in the house.
It's like a swear jar, but a language jar. You know, you have a swear jar every time you say a swear word. It's just gonna be like every time you speak English, you put money in that.
Exactly. Yeah. The 2-year-old child.
Exactly, yeah.
He's going to be putting...
But Hugo, he spoke English first, and his English is still better. Than his
but
French.
Your partner speaks in English with him,
Mick.
Correct?
He speaks a lot of French, but he spends a lot of time with his grandparents, and he goes to creche every day, which is 100% French. So he, even though he's got a lot of French in his environment, he still speaks English better.
Well, I've heard it's also the personality of the child, and there's other things like if you spend time outside of France, like, and you go back to your native country, and you can have them really dosed in that is good, because I have a friend and she spoke exclusively in English to her children and they don't speak English at all.
Maybe, wow. Maybe they hate her.
Nope, not true. Do.
Maybe she was punching them when they were speaking.
Although right. I have one final anecdote.
Yes.
About the language piece.
Uh huh. She likes this one.
Yep. So I have a friend. Obviously we're in a group of people who have bicultural relationships, and her daughter is American and French, and she was at school in French, and the mother would ask, how was your day? And she would say, fine or okay in English. But then when Papa came home, it was like unleashed, like telling him all about the day in French.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So it's interesting how, you know,
the sort of the power balance or the favoritism that goes on
with the parents affects
the language that's being spoken.
Yeah, so you never know.
And which parent it is, you know, if the mum speaks English or the dad speaks English, that can make the difference as well. And the gender of the child.
Mm. I mean, you know, Hugo speaks English all the time. You're his mum. You're the English speaking one. So that seems to suggest that if the mother speaks English, that's...
True, but I think it's a person who's with them the most. So, for example, James spends a lot of time...
been on the podcast.
Yeah.
James Simpson. So he spends a lot of time with Jules. Jules's English is great, but he's also looking... Jules is now 7, and his role model is his dad. Like, his dad does something, it's cool. Yeah. His dad speaks English. Whereas if his mum does it, it's less cool. Do you know what I mean? So that becomes important and does become more important later.
How long do you think it'll take for Jules to realise that James... Isn't that cool?
James is loved by children. Hugo loves James so much that Nico, my partner, will say, like, what did you do today? And Hugo will be like, oh, we saw James. I was like, no, we didn't. We didn't see James. He's like, James came over. I'm like, he didn't. James didn't come over. And he's always saying he did.
He's getting you into trouble.
I know.
He's like, oh, really? And what did Mommy and James do?
Oh, they just lay down for a while because they were tired. Right. They made a cake together in the bedroom. Whenever I ask,
I see you've already got the excuses lined up.
Right. Yeah. I've been preparing myself. That's right. Okay. Well, welcome back onto the podcast, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
I'm not used to using a microphone. So...
Yes.
No, that doesn't matter.
Go on.
No, I heard my ring tap on the microphone by accident. I'm not used to using that.
Hey, wait a minute, you heard
it. And I was just like, here we go.
Wait a minute, you heard your ring tap on the microphone.
Yeah.
And what ring are you talking about?
Just a ring that it's on my hands.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about that now? Going around. We're basically, I think this episode is going to be called Catching Up with Amber and Paul featuring... Sarah Donnelly.
Wow, thank you. Okay. I like having the feature act.
Because this is like Catching Up with Amber.
Do we have
Amber
a jingle?
There will be, yeah. Catching Up with Amber and Paul, number 6, I think this one will be. And this one's going to be featuring Sarah Donnelly. So I guess we've sort of caught up with you a little bit, Sarah. Maybe there's more info to come. Mm. I mean, you know,
sure.
We'll come round again. That's the way it goes. But Paul, so what's been going on with you then recently?
Got married. That was it, mostly. Yeah.
Just got married.
Just got married, yeah.
No big deal.
I got married to a French lady.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Yeah, right.
How was it?
Another one bites the dust.
Yeah.
How does it feel being married?
It's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It felt like we were already married like for 8 years. I mean, we went together for 8.5 years. So
right.
It was just...
So 6 months in, you're like, I'm married.
Like,
right.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, because we moved in straight away together.
So
we've been living together for almost as long as we've known each other. So yeah, it didn't really feel like anything changed. It was just, it was a really weird thing. I don't know. It didn't feel... Like when the ceremony was happening, it felt like I was watching myself getting married. Like I didn't feel like I was there.
Weird, because I felt I was watching you get married as well. I was there, by the way.
Yeah. So it was very, it was like an out of body experience a little bit. Cause I think we were just so stressed out and whatever. And it was just like, all right, cool. It's happening now. It's like, oh, this is happening now. And it's okay. We didn't really have time to
really appreciate the moment.
Yeah. So neither of us cried. I thought we were both going to be in tears.
I cried.
Did you?
Yes.
I welled up a little bit. Yeah. I didn't fully cry, but I started
I would have cried because I cried everything.
I've cried at everyone's wedding that I've been to, basically. Like, aww, like just the, t- like you, I just, I've like.
Did you cry at my wedding?
Yeah. Like, yeah, like I was choking up. Like, I was just like, oh. But our own one, it was just like, yeah, whatever, cool. Let's have a party.
I cried at your wedding.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's like, it's beautiful to see two people just, you know, express their love. It's just a beautiful, happy, joyous, lovely moment. And it's such an honor to be there.
To be honest, the thing that got me was when you were waiting there and everything, we're all waiting. And then we turned around and Addie was there, but she was being like led to the, to, I don't know how you describe
the altar,
it.
The altar?
The place.
Led down the aisle by your father.
Yeah.
For some reason, because it was your dad, that was, and I just felt like, well.
Oh my God. Me too. Everyone was just.
Bah. But why? I mean, are we allowed to say why? I mean, I can edit that out if it's, you know.
What? Unfortunately, her parents aren't with us anymore. Her mum passed away when she was very young, and then her dad passed away a few years ago. So she's got no parents and no family.
Yeah.
Not just that, like no brothers or sisters. Her parents didn't have brothers or sisters, so she has zero family. So I only had my mum and dad. And she asked my dad if he would be willing to walk her down, and he was like, yeah, that's
so
great.
When we turned around, I just saw Addie there, and it was just her and your dad, and I just thought, first of all, it was just so sweet that it was your dad that was giving her away, but then it was just this picture. I just realised that she was just sort of on her own, and that was really sad, but then that she was getting married to you, so it's like new family, new beginnings.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying it's sad that she's marrying Paul. Yeah, you're crying, no, Addie, no!
She could have done a lot better, obviously, but
clearly.
But anyway, it was like these three things all in one.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was quite a powerful emotional punch.
Yeah. Well, I think that a lot of people felt that. Because we knew that, like, we have been used to that situation for a long time.
Right.
Like, it wasn't a thing for us. But I think, you know, as much as, you know, we see, like, friends all the time and we tell, you know, and like a bunch of people, almost everyone knew that her parents had passed away already. But, like, I don't think you realize it until a moment like that, you know, where it's like, oh, shit, like, yeah, she, like, no, okay.
Right.
So yeah, it was as soon as the song, like when I came down with my mum, everything was fine until the opening song, she lost it. She was gone for the whole thing. She was, whole thing. Yeah, it was really.
Oh my god!
But it was. I don't know. We were just too much in it to be emotional. It was really strange.
Yes. No, I know.
Because I think when you get married, there's so many emotions leading up through the whole process, and when you've been with someone, so like at that point, like you've really thought about it and like you're making it happen, but everyone else, it's kind of their first time to see you two, like, oh, they're getting married, you know. So like,
that's a good way of putting it.
Because I didn't cry during my wedding. I was just happy. It was just a happy day and a happy time, and it was, you know, it was happening and everything was going mostly to plan. And yeah, but I think for other people to watch that, it's a nice moment.
Yeah.
There was lots of crying afterwards at the end of the night.
Yeah, the drunken crying.
Yeah.
The baby's joined the podcast now.
All right, then. So that's what you've been doing.
So that's
Paul.
What I've been doing. Yeah,
you've been
amongst
getting
other things. But yeah, that was the main event in the last couple of weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's all of that was to say that I was on stage the other day and my ring kept on hitting the microphone and I kept on hearing it. And I was like, oh, I'm going to have to figure out, because I'm left-handed as well.
Yeah.
I don't hold the microphone in my right hand.
Oh, you're
so
left-handed.
It's, so I kind of have to hold it like an English person drinks tea with my finger up.
Right. I see. Raising
or
the finger.
Like I can't grip it. Like I liked, all right, this is getting sexual now, but that's fine.
It wasn't that sexual yet.
Well,
you can't grip it like you like to grip it.
He's jumped ahead. Because we're still talking about microphones, but he was
talking about his equipment.
Clearly,
yeah.
So he's like, this is just like last night. When oh no,
that's right.
Because if he's left-handed, just saying.
What left-handed? What do you
he's
mean?
He's going to be doing everything with his left hand.
Oh, you mean wanking?
Yeah.
Right.
Do.
Yeah. All right then. So all right, that's some of Paul's latest news. Amber Minogue, what have you been doing?
The podcast.
Yes.
I released it.
Finally,
the podcast has been published.
Blimey, yes. And the response has been amazing from the Lepsters. Thank you all Lepsters who have been listening to it and writing
nice comments on on the website.
My army of ninjas or my army of...
And some ninjas came out of the woodwork and said, I am a ninja, but I am listening to this. And I was like, you're a ninja, but you are commenting on my...
What?
I'm going to find out who those ninjas are.
Ninjas who comment on your thing and not my thing?
Ninjas who came out of their ninja-hood.
What is it? What's all that about, do you think? Well, I've got, like... What's a ninjas?
No, what are the ninjas in the podcast?
So just to explain, the people I call ninjas are listeners who listen to the podcast but never actually write comments.
Oh, okay.
Or never get in touch with me. Yeah. They're just hiding in the shadows.
So the majority of people.
The vast majority of people, because I've got, quite a lot of listeners now. And, I hear from, not very many, a small portion of them. Mm-hmm. I still don't really understand why that is. Even when I sort of say, get in touch, let me know who you are. Still, most of them are just like, no, I will hide in the shadows and you'll never know who I am.
It's comfortable in the shadows.
It is. It's cool.
It's really cool and nice and there's no commitment in the shadows.
That's right. They don't have to. Maybe there's an English thing as well that people feel a bit sort of shy about writing to me in English.
Oh, because, in case they... feel like they're going to do mistakes.
Oh, I feel shy
like
about
I just did there.
Anything in
do
French.
Mistakes.
Do mistakes.
Do mistakes, yeah.
What is it? Make mistakes.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that's what it is. So how many more episodes of your podcast do we have to
I've
look
got
forward to?
There's three out.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to release them every just a bit under 2 weeks.
Okay.
Not every week. It's too much research.
I like
research.
The way you just laughed there. You were like...
every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, what's this? I do it every 2 days.
I know you are, but I mean you're
a machine.
Machine. Yeah. Mm.
He's a cyborg.
I've got
what
a lot
number
of
are you on? What number of podcasts will this be?
About 460.
Whoa. That's a lot of podcasting.
I've been doing it for over 8 years.
Wow.
Isn't it?
That's impressive.
But I'm a novice.
Ooh,
you've got to start somewhere.
You've got to start somewhere. That's right. Yeah. Paul, you're going to Australia soon, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
I've got listeners in Australia.
Have you?
Yep.
We'll tell them to come to my show.
When and where are you doing your show?
So, everyone listening from Australia, I will be in Brisbane.
G'day.
G'day, mate. How you going? But are they... They're not native Australians.
I doubt it. But...
They might be French.
Listen, if you want to come and see a show that's half in English, half in French, the 10th of July, I will be in Brisbane.
Brizzy,
mate. And then the 13th of July, I will be in Melbourne. And the 15th, I will also be in Melbourne. So the 10th, 13th and 15th are my show dates of July. All the tickets are available on my website if they want to check them out, because it's just there's too many details that no one cares about.
PaulTaylorComedy.com.
Yeah.
And you can find out the details of his shows that he's doing in Australia,
One of them's already sold out. The first Melbourne one on the 13th is sold out, so it's the 15th.
Struth!
Fucking oath!
Are these Aussie slang words?
Yeah, these are Aussie slang words. Do you know the Australian slang words?
I don't. So this is a misconception. Maybe you've talked about this, but people think that English is the same spoken the world around.
Uh-huh.
It's the further, I guess, east you go, the more it delineates from American English.
Right.
Even between the UK and the US, we have a lot of phrases and slang that's just...
Different.
Different. I actually took a quiz. How much UK English slang do you know? And I got 91%.
Yeah.
Well, that's obviously because you hang around with us.
And I lived in Northern Ireland for a year. Northern Ireland.
Hey, right. Sarah Donnelly, where are you from?
She's got Bellamina. A very Irish name as well, yeah. Donnelly.
Sarah Donnelly.
I bet you fit right in. Skin color, everything. Yeah. Name. You were.
Well, that's the thing with Irish people. Every American's like, I'm Irish. And they're like... Yeah, right. And I'm like, no, I'm really Sarah Donnelly. And they're like, all right, well, yeah.
We believe you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which part of Northern Ireland?
I was in Coleraine. It's an hour north of Belfast.
Okay.
So it is in the countryside. This was back in the days when the internet was not working well and I was a stupid college student. And I just thought I was going to school in Belfast for a year.
Yeah.
And didn't bother to look up where, because Google Maps didn't exist.
Right.
And so I'm on the bus and they stop at Jordanstown University, which is on the suburbs of Belfast. And I think this is my stop. So I'm getting off the bus and they're like, no, not you. Coleraine, keep going. And then we drove for another hour and all I saw were fields and sheep and cows. And I was like, what have I signed up
and
for?
Leprechauns.
Not even. They're not
little fucking leprechauns.
Not even leprechauns.
Barrels of gold and rainbows.
That's in the Republic of Ireland, though,
right?
Isn't it?
Do they have
leprechauns and rainbows in the north of?
No.
Leprechauns.
Just guns and
just the British
the troubles.
We're getting into dangerous territory.
Yeah. Dangerous, yeah.
Especially now because of, you know, what's DUP. Going on with the DUP and Theresa May.
I haven't followed any of that. I haven't had time yet. We'll talk about it later.
It's no surprise.
It's quite complicated. Anywho, the point is, my sister-in-law was in New Zealand for a year, and she got some book of slang and gave it to me, like, surely you can understand this. I'm like, I have no idea what any of
New
this
New Zealand
is.
Slang.
Yeah, and I don't...
To be honest, you don't need to learn the New Zealand slang. No one does, do they?
No.
Now you're going to have one angry listener from New Zealand.
New Zealand is an important place.
I know. Is that your New Zealand country. Accent?
Anyway, no, the point is, I don't know Australian slang. I barely know British slang.
Okay. On the subject of offending entire nations of people.
Oh, right.
Paul Taylor.
Sarah. No.
I think it's necessary at this juncture. I just wanted to make an announcement on the podcast. First of all, we're sorry to the people of New Zealand for the slight slur that we just made there.
All 4.5 million.
All 4.5 million. Sorry that we said no one cares about your version of English.
I didn't say that.
I said that. Also, we should apologise to the people of Northern Ireland for making fun of your accent, which I actually love.
I adore the Northern Irish accent.
Me too, yeah.
Nye on UTV. That's like my best.
Nye.
So instead of now, it's nye.
Nye.
Hi, Nye, Brian, Kai.
Which is how
Hold
now
on, let,
brown.
Let Paul do it. He's
how,
the one that masters.
How now brown cow is like just one of those things that people say to improve their accent. Yeah. But in Northern Ireland, it sounds like...
Hi, Nye, Brian, Kai.
Kai.
Dead on.
Correct. Dead on, so it is.
Okay, fantastic, so sorry so to the people of Northern Ireland if you feel like we've been insensitive.
But it's out of love.
Yeah, it's totally
out of love.
In the last episode of this podcast, I was talking about Taiwan, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you know? What Taiwan is?
It's not a country.
Yes.
Ah, now that's the thing. I was talking about.
I thought it was a country,
right?
But it's not.
In Taiwan, apparently,
does this depend if you're from Taiwan or China?
Well, yes.
Or the US.
Hello there. I'm just interrupting the podcast here in order to make a clarification. So what's happening here in this conversation is that I'm saying that in the previous episode, I mentioned Taiwan as a country. Okay. Then I got a letter from a Chinese lepster saying, no, Taiwan is not a country. And since then, I've had plenty of correspondence from people in Taiwan saying to me, no, Taiwan definitely is a country, and we're fighting hard to let everybody know that. So basically, this is a very sensitive political subject, and I know I'm not Donald Trump or anything. I mean, I'm not that influential, but you're going to hear me now apologizing to China, first of all, for apparently getting it wrong when I said that Taiwan is a country. But I would also like to say that I completely recognize, for the Taiwanese people and plenty of other people, that Taiwan definitely is a country, okay? So some people believe it's not a country, other people believe that it is a country. I have no opinion on this myself, and all I wanted to do here is just say the truth. And it just goes to show that in some cases, what constitutes truth to one group of people is not truth to another group of people, and it depends on where you are. So I'm sorry for my clumsiness. I acknowledge fully the fact that to some people Taiwan isn't a country, and for other people it most certainly is a country. And this is a dispute that I have absolutely no desire to be part of. And in an effort to make things better, I just want to say sorry to everyone, and not just one side. Okay? Right, good. Back to the podcast. I was talking about in Taiwan there's a there's a restaurant themed around toilets. Hilarious, right?
And typical Luke's English podcast material there.
That's not why we're here today.
No. And I was saying, you know, blah, 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 Taiwan. Oh, you know, I don't know if that's normal in Taiwan because it's a very clean country. I said Taiwan was a country because I received an email from someone in China who said, basically, I'm writing to you to clarify a fact. Taiwan is just a province of China. You know, the United Kingdom has diplomatic relations with China, but it doesn't have it with Taiwan. There are 194 countries, and 169 of them have diplomatic relations. Basically, Taiwan's not a country, and I'm sorry.
There's more countries than 194, isn't there?
But don't they recognize like themselves as a country? This is even murkier than Northern Ireland.
Basically, yeah. The point is that the listener went on to say, I don't want to preach politics, and I also know that everyone has his or her opinions of politics, but Luke, your podcast is a worldwide podcast. You have listeners all over the world. They will listen and they will be influenced. Maybe all the Chinese who listened to it were not happy. I hope you can avoid mentioning it in your podcast in the future. Well, here I am mentioning it again. But you know, I'm sorry to the... How many Chinese people are there?
1.5 billion.
What? Sorry to the 1.5 billion, all of whom listening to this...
It's a bit more than the 4.5 million of... how many countries in the world? I'm sure there's more than that.
So anyway, sorry to the people of China. Obviously, now I recognize that it's... Sarah just dropped a spoon on the floor.
While all this has been happening, yeah. I was going to say, this is a Luke's English podcast first. I've been feeding my baby. I gave her a bottle, and now she's having her goûter.
That's right.
So excuse me, but I need to wash this.
Go ahead. No, just go ahead. So anyway, that's that done. I just wanted to get that dealt with. You know, we could have a long political argument.
That's a long I thought the question how many countries are there in the world was going to be easy. It's going to be like, here's the answer. It's way more complicated.
No, because
than that.
It's all politics, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because all the delineations of borders, they're all political borders. Yeah. They're not geographical.
It's between 195 and 196. Apparently.
I think also once I mentioned Tibet as well and said that Tibet was a country, which is the same
Tibet
story.
Tibet doesn't exist anymore.
It's not a country. It's China, isn't it now? So yeah. I'm sorry to all of the Chinese people. And, you know, so there you go. Right, done.
Scotland won't be a country.
Oh. Scotland, no, will be a country. It's just
it'll be its own.
The United.
It's your definition of what makes a nation, what makes a state.
Yeah, exactly. It's a long, complicated thing. So there you go. All right. So all good. Right. Do you feel like we've caught up with each other?
Yeah. Yep. Did I mention that I have a baby? I'm sorry.
Yes, you may have mentioned that already.
She also mentioned it as well.
Has she? Can you? I wonder if you can hear. Okay. Oh God.
Sarah's attempting to put apple compote into the baby's mouth, and the baby's kicking the spoon away. And eating as well, that's good.
She loves to kick.
Yum, yum, yum.
Oh, yeah.
All right, then. Fine.
Bam, caught up.
Yeah, good. We've caught up. So that's that. Half an hour of catching up.
Yeah, which is less than normal, because normally we ramble on, we're doing this and doing that.
That was quite efficient.
All right, I'm going to stop the podcast here, and then we'll start again. We'll do something else, all right?
Okay.
Okay, good.
Ladies and gentlemen...
This is a journey into
the English language.
A journey into
the DNA of the English language.
Really?
The DNA of the English language. Now, that's a really quite a strong claim.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Who are you?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
You know who I'm talking to.
I'm a school teacher. I teach English composition.
Oh, really?
Yes!
Hello again. So there you are. That was our half-hour chat with Amber Paul and Sarah. And what I'd like to do now is go through some of the language and a few little cultural points that came up in that conversation. I wonder how it was. I wonder how it was for you. Did you manage to follow everything? I understand it was a little bit chaotic, as I said at the beginning, because of people talking sometimes at the same time and things like that. That makes it more difficult for you to follow, doesn't it? I expect so. But whenever I get together with my friends like this on the podcast, we just talk without really kind of grading our English too much. Lots of language comes out. There's loads of vocabulary and different bits of language that pop out that just people say without really thinking about it. And it's quite interesting to go through a conversation like that and pick out certain bits of language which I can help you to notice. And I can explain them to you. You can then maybe try and use them yourselves if you think that you can add them to your active vocab. Also, what you could do is, after I've explained some of this language and highlighted it and clarified it and stuff, you could go back and listen to the conversation again, and you'll be equipped with all the things you need to know to be able to follow the whole thing just like you were there and you were one of us. And also, generally, you can just improve your language as you move forwards with your learning of English. So this is a good opportunity to focus on some vocabulary here. So let's do that. Now then, at the beginning of the conversation, I asked Paul to explain what was going on, and he said it was hot as hell. Hot as hell. Or as hot as hell. But often you just miss out the first as, so you say, oh, it's hot as hell. I think it's slightly American to say hot as hell. We don't say it so much in the UK, but there it is. It's hot as hell. But there are other words that you could use when it's very hot. I used some of them at the beginning of this episode without necessarily explaining them. So I've got now four different phrases or words for saying that it's very, very hot. So the first one is that it's boiling. So this is an extreme adjective. So you can't say it's very boiling. You'd have to say it's absolutely boiling. It's boiling, like, boiling hot. Also, you could say it's sweltering. It's absolutely sweltering today. Sweltering, S-W-E-L-T-E-R-I-N-G. And that, again, just means that it's very, very hot. It's baking today. It's absolutely baking. So baking is, you know, like the way you cook food, you bake bread in the oven. But you can also say it's baking today. Also, it's blisteringly hot. So blisteringly, the adverb, blisteringly, and hot, the adjective, right? So blisteringly hot. If it's so hot that it gives you blisters, you know, blisters, let's say, for example, if you've got some new shoes and you go walking in your new shoes, then you're probably going to get a blister on your foot, right? That's a blister. Also, if you get bad sunburn, if it's too hot, you might get blisters as well from sunburn. So if it's blisteringly hot, it means it's so hot that it might give you blisters, okay? Blisteringly hot. What else? You heard Sarah talking about being partnered with a French person. She was saying that being partnered with a French person is hard work. And she said that I have 1 hour's worth of material on this. So as a stand-up, she did her own show, which was called Help, I'm Married a Frenchman. And she has 1 hour's worth of material on that subject. So the language here that I'm focusing on is the expression 1 hour's worth of something. It doesn't have to be one, and it doesn't have to be an hour. It can be any unit of time. In this case, it's 1 hour's worth of material. So she's got enough material for 1 hour. But you can also, you know, use that structure for lots and lots of different other expressions. For example, you know, 5 minutes worth of something. You might say, we've got 3 days worth of food left. 3 days worth of food left. So we've got only enough food to keep us alive for 3 days, or to keep eating for 3 days. I've got 10 minutes worth of battery left in my phone. I've got 10 minutes worth of battery. So it's 10, like number. And then the unit of time, in this case, minute or hour or day. And it's plural as well, if it's plural. I mean, for 1 hour, it's not, but for 5 minutes or 3 days or 10 minutes, it's plural. So how do you deal with the possessive part? Because it's 10 minutes worth. It's possessive minutes. So you have to write it 10 minutes plural with an S and then an apostrophe and then nothing. So if it's an apostrophe for possession on a plural word with S, you just add the apostrophe at the end. Similarly, if it's a person's name that ends in S and you're making a possessive form, you would just put the apostrophe at the end and then no S, because we don't like the look of S apostrophe S. It just doesn't look very nice. So anyway, 10 minutes worth of battery left. I've got 1 hour's worth of material on this. You're probably listening to probably about 1 hour's worth of podcast in this episode, I expect. So bringing up a baby in a foreign country with a foreign partner, will they speak English or will they speak both languages? So here I'm looking at the phrase to bring up a baby, to bring up a child. That means to educate the child, look after the child until they become an adult. Okay, so educating and helping and feeding and clothing and looking after the child while also helping them become an adult. That's to bring someone up. There's another verb that we use to say the same thing. Do you know what it is? Well, it's to raise a child. To raise a child, okay? It's the same thing as to bring up a child. Those both can be used in the passive form to say, for example, I was brought up in London, or I was raised in London, or I was raised to be, you know, I was raised to be an honest person. I was brought up to be polite, for example. So it's to be raised or to be brought up in a place or to be a certain way. Also, we'd say that we grow up, of course. I grew up in London. For example, you could say I grew up to be something, but that means that you became that thing later on. So, for example, I grew up to be a musician, for example. Listeners, I'm asking you now about your experiences of parenthood. Do you have experience of bringing up a baby to be bilingual? Let us know. I'm interested to know your thoughts about how you can bring up a child to be bilingual. For example, if just one parent speaks English and the rest of the time it's, let's say, French with school, friends and everything else, will the child be bilingual? So leave me your thoughts. I'd like to know what you think about that. We also had the word anglophone. An anglophone person means someone who speaks English. Similarly, you'd have something like francophone, which means French, someone who speaks French. Now, I use the word condone. Do you know what the word condone means? In fact, I made a stupid joke, which was, I don't condone the hitting of a child. Of course, I don't condone the hitting of a child. My stupid joke was like, if my child grew up to speak French and called me papa, then, you know, I'd say, no, it's father. Obviously, I'm joking. It's a stupid thing to say, but, you know, that's what happens when you make a joke sometimes, isn't it? You go over the line a little bit. Obviously, I didn't mean it. But anyway, the word is condone. So if you condone something, it means you sort of support it publicly. You stand up for that idea, and you're generally in favour of that thing. You support it. You're in favour of it. In fact, you kind of advocate for it. You know, you say that people should be doing it. For example, I condone recycling. For example, okay, meaning I encourage other people to do it. What's the opposite of condone? Meaning to say that you think people shouldn't do it. In fact, stand out against it publicly. Well, that's the word to condemn something. Obviously, I would condemn things like littering or, you know, damaging the environment or things like that, you know, vandalism, for example. So condone means that you support it. Condemn means that you're against it. OK, so I condone something or I condemn something. Paul said that during his wedding ceremony, he had a kind of an out of body experience. Now, if you have an out of body experience, that means that you feel like you're sort of maybe even floating out of your body and looking at yourself. I don't think he had a full-on out-of-body experience, because those things can be like a full-on sort of spiritual experience, you know, an out-of-body experience when you are on a hospital bed or something. I don't think it was the full-on out-of-body experience, but he felt like he was looking at himself like he was watching the whole thing happening from a remote position, which is interesting. I suppose that when he was preparing for the wedding, he went through all the routines and the preparation so many times that it didn't feel like it was really happening when it was actually happening. So anyway, that's an out-of-body experience. Not the full kind, but a sort of out-of-body experience. He said that him and his wife were very stressed out. He said, we were so stressed out. So you can obviously be stressed, but you can be stressed out as well. It's just another way of saying stressed. A few different phrases for crying here. Some different vocabulary to talk about crying. So Paul said that neither of us cried. Now, can you think of some other ways of saying that someone is crying? What about to start crying or to get emotional? Well, obviously to cry. Another one was, I think Paul said, I thought everybody would be in tears. So to be in tears means that you're crying. So, you know, I was in tears at the end of the movie, for example. Now, what about expressions to describe the moment when you start to cry, or maybe just water appears in your eyes? So you don't fully cry, but the water appears in there and you start to get a little bit emotional. Well, when the water appears in your eyes, you can say that you welled up. I welled up a bit. Which is what happened to me at Paul's wedding. I welled up a little bit. I didn't fully cry, but I did start to well up. And similarly, in a cinema, you might, you know, well up a little bit, you know, during a certain scene. To well up, W-E-L-L, up. And a well, of course, is a sort of a hole in the ground where you keep water. So to well up means when the water or the tears start to come out of your eyes a little bit. And another one would be, let's say you're talking, maybe you're giving your marriage vows on your wedding day, you're talking, and you start to get just a little bit emotional like that. You can say that you choke up. Paul said I was choking up, or someone was choking up. I think Paul was choking up at my wedding. So everyone was crying and in tears and welling up and choking up and things like that. Okay, so to cry, to be in tears, to well up, to choke up. Okay, some more wedding vocab here. To walk down the aisle. The aisle. So that's the space between the seats in the middle of the church. And obviously the groom stands at the end with his best man and probably a priest or some other person who's going to do the ceremony. And then the bride arrives and she walks down the aisle, usually with her father. They walk down the aisle. In a church, they walk towards the altar, which is where the wedding will take place. Now, the thing that kind of made me well up at Paul's wedding was the fact that Paul's wife, Addie, was walked down the aisle with Paul's dad. So Paul's dad gave her away. There's another expression, to give someone away at a wedding. So usually the bride's father gives her away, like literally gives her away to the husband, to the groom. In this case, because Addie's parents aren't with us anymore, they passed away, which means that, not tragically, but unfortunately they're not with us. They passed away, they died. Addie was given away by Paul's dad, which I found very sweet. You know, I said it was so sweet that it was your dad that was giving her away. So we got to walk down the aisle, to give someone away, to walk to the altar, and to be ways of saying that someone is dead. You can say that they're not with us anymore, or that they passed away, or that they died. Sometimes people don't like to say that someone died because they feel like it's too strong a word, it's too heavy a word, and so people choose other ways of saying it, like they passed away or they're not with us anymore. Paul at one point was talking about how when he holds a microphone, the wedding ring on his finger taps the microphone and he can hear it, and he said that he's left-handed. So there's an expression there just to refer that, you know, to the fact that when someone prefers their left hand rather than their right hand, you can say they're left-handed or right-handed, which I didn't know. I didn't realise Paul was left-handed. And then Paul was talking about, well, holding the microphone, and it started to sound a bit like an innuendo. And Paul was saying, I can't grip it like I like to grip it. Which is an innuendo. Remember innuendo? It was from that episode with Amber about British humour. Innuendo basically means like saying something that could have a double meaning. And usually the double meaning is a bit rude. So an innuendo, in this case, Paul was started to do a kind of an innuendo, saying, I can't grip it like I like to grip it. Which, you know, in the end, we started to realise that he was thinking about something else. He was gripping not a microphone, but something of a fairly similar shape. But Amber said he's jumped ahead. So Paul jumped ahead because he was talking about the sexual connotations before anyone else had realised. So he jumped ahead. So he went to the innuendo before we even realised it. Amber, talking about her podcast, said that some ninjas came out of the woodwork. Okay, to come out of the woodwork is the expression here. And this means if something comes out of the woodwork, or if someone or some people come out of the woodwork would mean, I suppose, all of the wooden stuff in your house, like wooden beams or wooden furniture in your house. And sometimes, like, wooden furniture or beams have cracks, and insects might live in the woodwork. And if the insects come out of the woodwork, it means that they appeared after having been hidden or inactive for a long time. For example, you could say after you've been in a relationship for a while, all sorts of secrets. After you've been in a relationship for a while, all sorts of little secrets start to come out of the woodwork. And Amber said that some ninja lepsters came out of the woodwork and commented on her podcast. So the expression to come out of the woodwork just means that when someone appears after they've been hidden for a long time. And it's mildly disapproving. It's slightly negative or pejorative. So what I think, you know, the slightly disapproving sense is that Amber was saying that, you know, they're ninjas and they never comment. They decided to, like, come out. Amber's like, why don't you come out more often? That's the disapproving side of it. Anyway, so some ninjas came out of the woodwork and commented on her podcast, which you should listen to, panampodcast.com. You can find it there. Now then, a bit of Australian slang, because Paul is going to be performing comedy in Australia. He's doing his show there in July. You can check out paultaylorcomedy.com for all the details. But we ended up talking a little bit about some Australian slang or Aussie slang. So Australians can be called Aussies. They can be called lots of things, but Aussies is the appropriate one, really. That's the nickname for Australian people, Aussies. So Australians have got, obviously, a particular accent and also certain slang that they use only in Australia. And there are various kind of typical things that most people, certainly most British people, know about Australian slang. It seems that the Americans are less familiar with the way that Australians speak English, as you heard from Sarah. She didn't seem to know the slang words. But in Britain, we're quite familiar with Australian slang words and Australian accents, because we're exposed to a lot of it on our television. We watch a lot of Australian soap operas like Neighbours and Home and Away. When I was growing up, when I was a teenager, Neighbours was on TV basically every day, I think. In fact, it was on twice a day. They would show it at lunchtime and repeat it again in the evening. And Neighbours was basically set in a town near Melbourne. And so it was full of Australians. And so we heard lots of Australian English from that show. And there are various kind of things, or they might be cliches, but little bits of slang that Australians say that everyone knows. Like the first one is when an Australian person says hello, they say g'day. So g'day. And Australians have got a kind of a particular accent. It sounds a little different. Sometimes I can do it really well, and sometimes I can't do it at all. I'm not sure, you know, what it is. I haven't been watching, like, Neighbours or Home and Away recently. So my Aussie accent's a little bit sketchy. But anyway, sometimes also my Aussie accent becomes like New Zealand. Anyway, g'day, mate. How are you going? G'day, mate. Is like, hello, friend. Now, we say mate in British English, too. We say, all right, mate. But in Australia, it's g'day, mate. G'day. G'day. Not g'day. G'day. G'day, mate. How you going? How you going? Which is how are you going, which means how are you? So in the UK, it's all right, mate, how are you doing? Or all right, mate, how's it going? In Australia, good day, mate, how you going? And also they sort of turn longer words into shorter words. Sort of they give nicknames to things, like, for example, the afternoon in Australia might be called the arvo. I'll see you later in the arvo. I'll be back in the arvo. Arvo. Afternoon. And also barbecue becomes Barbie. Yeah, mate, we're gonna have a Barbie later on this later on this arvo. Why don't you come round? We'll have a Barbie together. The word bogan. A bogan is a sort of like a redneck from Australia. These kind of guys who drive around in their modified cars, and they've got particular ways of speaking and dressing, and they drive like these fast cars. They're bogans. Every culture, it seems, has got people like this. In America, it's like rednecks. Rednecks. In Australia, they're bogans. In the UK, I suppose we've got like chavs. Chavs, but that's not a very nice word. A chav is like a low-class person who might be a bit of a criminal or something, and they tend to wear certain fake sportswear clothing. Chavs. But in Australia, bogans. Chockers. Oh my God, it's absolutely chockers in town, mate. Chockers means chock-a-block, which means full, very, very busy. In fact, I said chock-a-block at the beginning of this episode. I said this episode is chock-a-block with vocab. If something's chock-a-block, it means it's full. There's loads of things in it, loads of people. And in Australia, you might say chockers. Yeah, mate, I went up to Oxford Street, mate. It was absolutely chockers, full of people. Yeah, fair dinkum. Fair dinkum, mate. I don't know if that's a cliche. I think it's a bit of a cliche, but fair dinkum. It's a bit like saying, yeah, no worries, or yeah, fine, no problem. Okay, cool. Yeah, cool, man. Fair dinkum, mate. I don't know what dinkum means. I've no idea. It's like saying fair enough, fair play, yeah, nice one, fair dinkum. And also, slightly ruder in Australia, you might hear, yeah, fucking oath, mate. Fucking oath. Fucking oath, which is the same as fair dinkum. And probably much more common and not rude is, yeah, sweet as, mate. Sweet as. Sweet as. Which means, like, good, basically. Like, it could be as sweet as... I think it's as sweet as a nut is the full expression. Sweet as a nut. But a nut isn't particularly sweet, is it, really? Anyway, yeah, sweet as, mate. Sweet as. Yeah, yeah, mate. Come over this arvo. We're going to have a barbie. Yeah, sweet as, mate. Fair dinkum. Okay, there you go. There's a bit of Aussie slang for you. Kiwi slang, that slang from New Zealand, is pretty similar to Aussie or UK slang. They've probably got a few unique words, but it's fairly similar to Australian or British slang, really, Kiwi slang. But the accent is different. And for years, I couldn't differentiate the New Zealand accent from the Australian accent. But the more that you hear... the more that you hear it, the more you realise how different it is. And if you want to hear the New Zealand accent, you should watch episodes of Flight of the Conchords, the TV show, which features some Australian, Kiwi characters in America. So Flight of the Conchords, it's really great, it's really funny. I should do an episode about that in the future where we listen to some Kiwi English and maybe hear a few extracts from Flight of the Conchords, the TV show, or something like that. But here we are then. That's the end of all the vocab. Did you get it all? Shall I test you? Shall I test you a little bit? Let's try. How would you say it's very hot? Oh my God, it's really hot. It's, yeah, it's hot as hell. Begins with a B. Boiling. Two others beginning with a B. What do you do with bread? Yeah, it's baking. And what about if it's so hot that it damages your skin? Yeah, it's blisteringly hot. Well done. What about if you've got like three loaves of bread and some milk and some other bits of food that's going to last you 3 days? What have you got? You've got 3 days worth of food. That's it. Okay. What about when you help a child become an adult? There's two expressions. You bring up the child and also you raise the child. That's it. Similarly, you can talk about your own childhood and say I was brought up or I was raised. Let's see. What about people who speak English? You could say that they are anglophone. That's right. And people who speak French, for example, could be francophone. That's it. How do you say that you support something? You publicly sort of defend or support or encourage something. That would be to condone something. And, you know, I don't condone drug use, for example. Or what about the opposite, where you say that you stand out against something? That's to condemn. That's it. Well done. So I condemn, the use of illegal drugs, for example. What about when you are having a crazy experience and you feel like you've left your body and you're looking down on the situation? You're having what? You're having an out-of-body experience. By the way, if anyone has ever had an out-of-body experience who's listening to this, please let me know. I'd love to hear about some of that weird and wonderful stuff, like out-of-body experiences and psychic travelling and, you know, near-death experiences and things. I find that stuff absolutely fascinating. What is the word that you can add to the word stressed, which just makes it sound a bit more natural? Stressed what? I was really stressed out. That's it, stressed out. Okay, three other ways of saying that you cried. You can say I cried and I was in tears. That's it, good. What about when you start crying, the water just appears in your eyes? Oh, I was welling up. That's it. And if you're just starting to get a little bit emotional, you could say you were choking up. That's it. So to cry, to be in tears, to well up, to choke up. What's the space between all the chairs? There's a space to walk in a church or in an aeroplane or in a theatre, a cinema. You walk down the aisle. That's it, the aisle. Paul's dad, it was very sweet because Paul's dad did something. He walked down the aisle with Paul's bride. And so Paul's dad gave her away. That's it. He gave her away. Paul uses his left hand to do everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. So Paul favours his left hand because he is, what? He's left-handed. That's right. Right-handed, left-handed. And Paul said he can't hold the microphone in the way that he likes to hold it. What's the word to say hold? Hold it tightly, sort of in your hand, begins with a G, to grip. Yes, that's it. He said, I can't grip it like I like to grip it. And we all thought, I bet you can't. What else? What's that expression that means when you've been hidden for a while, or some people or things have been hidden, and then they reveal themselves after a while of being hidden or inactive? Some ninjas came out of the woodwork. That's it. Oh, there's one I missed here, which I probably didn't need to mention anyway because Paul said it. But mistakes. What's the verb that collocates with the word mistakes? What do you do? You feel like you're going to make mistakes. That's it. Make mistakes, don't do mistakes. It's actually make mistakes, okay? Then there was the Aussie slang. Like, g'day, mate. How you going? I'm fine. Yeah, listen, I'm having a barbie later on this arvo. Why don't you come over? Tell you what, mate, the barbie we had last night was chockers. Yeah, all these bogans turned up. It was a bloody nightmare. Yeah, fair dinkum, mate. Fucking oath. Sweet airs. Struth as well. That's another one. Struth. Struth is a bit of a cliche. Struth is spelled S-T-R-E-W-T-H. That's another bit of Australian slang. Struth, look at all those bogans, mate. On the subject of expressions like, how you going, which means how are you, there are lots of little questions like that that we use every day that can be quite difficult to pick up. Like, you know, how's it going? What's up? What are you doing? How long? How have you been? What have you been up to? What have you been doing? You know, little questions like that. I expect that the next episode of this podcast is going to be all about that kind of thing. Tricky little questions in social English. And I'm going to give you a test in that episode. I'm going to test you. And then we're going to see how some native speakers respond to those questions too. So that's what you can expect in the next episode of this podcast. But for now, I would just like to say thank you very much for listening. But that's it for this episode, and I'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. Goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. For listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.